Chapter 24. On board the Peter Pan bus, Poppy and gang are lucky enough to have the whole back to themselves. Having been thrown off the train, especially on Marl's charges, was a definite detour on their mother-murder family reunion mission to Provincetown, but they dealt with it like the bouncy gorillas they are. Two extremely tall gentlemen in the train station, who identified themselves as members of the Boston Celtics, had taken pity on the stranded, upward-moving travelers, explaining the only way to get to Provincetown is on this low-rent bus they are now taking. Had Poppy been seeing things, or did they both bounce a little when they mentioned that it was just a 9-minute walk to the station at 1 Peter Pan Way? Could they, too, be part of the movement? Daryl has been too afraid to ask for directions for fear Richard would pop out of his pants and proposition these nice men, but Campolina thought this address was a hoot and said so as she mini-bounced in place. You know what? The basketballers hadn't shown the slightest homophobia. They just dribbled their bodies in place to match her movements and shouted out, "We are everywhere," in full camaraderie. And now Poppy's posse is on the way to Hyannis. No such thing as a direct bus. You have to change there to get to Provincetown, but at least this time they have tickets. Thanks again to another subculture of rebounders, punk rockers. Bouncing their way to the bus station, the tramps had been trying to be as inconspicuous as possible in a city not known for being that accepting of exercise extremists. And there they were, six new wave weirdos in a crummy alley, Dead Boys music blaring from a taped-together boombox, celebrating the hatred of everyone in the world but themselves. The obvious leader, whose name Lupus was tattooed over and over everywhere on his body that you could see, including his forehead, was pogo dancing with his girlfriend, who they later learned was called Sticker Bush. She still clung to a blousy Nancy Spungen slum goddess look, yet she pulled it off and even managed to make it look contemporary. Maybe it was the scabs around her nose from huffing spray paint fumes from the cans, which were now empty and littering the alley. Another one of them, who introduced himself as Jonesy, looked exactly like Stiv Bader's, if he had lived and aged poorly. He still had those Sex Pistol skinny legs, but his potbelly made it impossible to button the top of his Ramones-type jeans. No mosh pit for this guy. He's too fat to catch. The other three, and God knows what their names were, looked over from actually burning a pile of money and grinned at the skyward movements of Poppy and her followers. Kindred spirits indeed. The Latino one, who kind of looked like a more butch version of Darby Crash, explained that they had stolen the cash from a gay bar that played techno music that got on their safety pin nerves. Poppy, a lifelong pogo dancer without realizing it until now, started upward dancing with Volta and Lipa to show their musical adaptability. Being from a different generation, Adora hardly enjoyed this type of hit parade. She thought bands played in nightclubs, not garages, believed all pop songs should be at least 3 minutes in length, and assumed noise was something you complained about, not bought. Yet when in Providence, do as the Providencetonians do. She grabbed Surprise out of the bag, crouched down, and shook her senior citizen ass just to show her support. Surprise gave an uncannily accurate Sid Vicious sneer and joined in the sideways shimmying. The other punk girl, the one sporting a Rite Aid dyed blue mohawk badly in need of a trim, leapt up after setting another wad of bills on fire. Springboard Sam and Doubleback Barbara cheered her on as she broke into a slam-dancing pogo sideways move and rammed herself right into her hardcore buddies, giving them a preview of an anarchistic choreography that didn't even have a name yet. Surprise barked bitchily and hissed her approval like the true punk rock pussy she has always been. Mohawk's girlfriend, whose tongue featured so many piercings that not one word out of her mouth was comprehensible to the human ear, joined in, and the hybrid punk-twerk dance party began to build to a frenzy. Campolina, Springboard Sam, and Doubleback Barbara proved their whole lot of shaken politics could translate to this freakazoid shindig and started gyrating too, but not Daryl. No shaking for him when he saw that Latino one squatting and thrusting right in front of him, about to burn the last big bundle of filthy capitalistic cash. No siree. Not when Richard might start shaking back in his pants, falsely signaling some sort of secret homosexual mating call to this punk rock radical, who certainly didn't look gay, but these days, who can tell, right? It's the United Nation of Cocksuckers out there, and there's not much you can do about it. Twisted Billy was so proud of himself. After two body tours of the alphabet, both upper and lower case, he had finally managed to hold himself in the human position of the dancing dollar sign. But none of these punks seemed to understand. Did they think he was an S? Couldn't they see his one arm twisted vertically to complete the symbol of what they needed? Duh, cold hard cash. He can shake sideways and still think at the same time. Why couldn't they? But guess who came to the rescue? As the leaping, twitching, shaking, grinding, hopping dance disturbance reached a finale, Richard burst out of Daryl's pants and snatched with the hole in the top of his head the last bundle of wrapped cash before it could be incinerated. Never mind the bollocks, indeed. And now they're on a bus, with 9 paid-for one-way tickets costing them $270 total, right in Poppy's pocket. Richard can still be a hidden package, and surprise, well, she has learned to stow away with stealth and cunning. As the almost empty bus speeds up I-95 North through Fall River, the birthplace of Lizzie Borden, Poppy feels a spiritual bond with what she did and would like to give her own mother the same 40 whacks and her father 40 hugs. She yearns for the rewards of revenge, the closure she knows the embracement of her father and the murder of her mother will provide. But sometimes the pain, the damage, the dysfunction of maternal mayhem that mutates inside her is just more than she can bear. Thieving, hussy, yells Volta, seeing her leader's pain on her way up in a tricky leap that leaves room for her to turn her head sideways and avoid contact with this outdated bus's ceiling. Motion, bigot, chimes in Lipa, landing with a loud boom as they cross the Bourne Bridge into Cape Cod. Let's keep it down in here, yells the white bus driver, surprised at any onboard trouble in these off-season months. Twisted Billy is poetry in motion as he repeatedly dances up and down the aisle through the letters L-I-A-R, in sinuous left-to-right contortions that momentarily appease the venom pulsating in Poppy's vibrating victim veins. But as the bus nears the Hyannis exit, the fellow travelers don't seem one bit impressed by his antics. What's your problem? Calls out a smart-ass hipster dude with an I-just-kidnapped-Elizabeth-Smart-type beard. Yeah, sit down, fool, grumbles a grouchy-looking woman wearing an I-got-issues sweatshirt before moving to a seat farther in the front. But when Poppy lets out a sudden new howl of momophobic fury, these two idiots freeze in place and dare not open their fucking mouths again.